Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Happy weekend, friends, and welcome to the podcast. Follow us on Spotify right now and you'll get this every single week. It's a selection of my favourite chats from the last couple of days as a warm ear hug for you. What's on this week's episode? Well, Grace Campbell's comedy on taboo things, Hugh Wallace attacks Castle Bar, and Jamie Duffy saves the world with a piano, plus Kamala Harris finally does an interview but says very little. We begin with Gen Z sensation Grace Campbell, who's a really popular British comedian. She spoke to us about her crisis pregnancy and how she works that into her show, along with the tropes of feminism and British people behaving badly and so on. She also happens to be Alistair Campbell's daughter, but I asked her mostly about her mum, who's a fascinating woman. She also worked inside Tony Blair's Number 10, but she opposed the Iraq War and resigned over it. So we talked about all of that. After that chat, Hugh Wallace, the television architect, came in to talk about Great House Revivals, but he got horribly sidetracked and he managed to upset half of Mayo when he labelled Castlebar depressing. Also, he said he doesn't want people building houses in the countryside either. So he's always provocative, but always a bit of fun as well. So we enjoyed his visit. Then Jamie Duffy came in to chat and play some music. He's a wee genius from Glasslough in County Monaghan. Went viral in recent years with a piece he composed, and he played it on piano. It's called Solace, which is a mixture of classical and traditional Irish music. People really loved young Jamie Duffy. He got the worldwide attention from that. He came in to chat about a tour he's doing in Ireland, Britain and in Europe, and he played some tunes for us as well. And at the end of the podcast, you'd hear the breakdown of Kamala Harris's first interview as a candidate. I took it apart to such an extent that I got a flood of listeners accusing me of being a Trump supporter. It's not easy being balanced in a US election season, friends. And that is everything in the podcast. On Monday, of course, I'll be back on the wireless RT Radio 1, 9 a.m. till 10 every weekday. So, in the meantime, let's start the weekend podcast. Grace Campbell is a comedian, and she's a doyenne, I suppose, of the brat summer culture, maybe of comedy, especially the comedy influencers that celebrate with sketches, the kind of slacking and partying lifestyles of Gen Z. And she is coming to Dublin as well. Grace Campbell, good morning to you.
Hello, how are you?
Lovely to talk to you, and thank you for joining us from London.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Where you born and bred from and love?
Yes, I've never really left. Well, you know. Not permanently, anyway.
I love this laissez-faire attitude we're already getting, which is a sighing comedian early in the morning. A good run in Edinburgh, did you enjoy?
It was great, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I was kind of smug because I only did the first 2 weeks. So everyone usually, you know, I usually do the whole month.
Oh, yeah.
So I just did the first 2 weeks and then I got to leave. But it was brilliant.
You were there for the fresh stages.
For the start, yeah. And then I felt bad because I left all of my friends who were still ploughing on, who had to do 2 more weeks.
God, it's a...
Yeah, it's that halfway point in Edinburgh is when it gets really, like, you know, you either turn to, like, drinking or you have to, like, go far the other way and not see anyone and not speak to anyone.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's a hard slog. It's a hard, yeah. It's a hard job. So I really do appreciate the early morning thing. Give us an idea of the sort of thing you do online and how that transfers to the stage.
Online, I just make videos and, yeah. Well, I now have a podcast as well.
Yes.
Which is called Late to the Party. But online, I just make things that I think would make my friends laugh, mainly. Videos that, about relationships and people's love lives, like comedy from sketches to stand up to, well, now with the podcast, more kind of like interviewee stuff, which has been really fun, being able to like talk to other funny people that I admire and then being able to put that out in the world. I had Joanne McNally on the podcast, which was incredible. It was just an amazing hour of, we had so much fun.
You're curled up on the sofa. There's a very late night atmosphere to those podcasts.
That's the vibe. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to create a late night podcast, basically. You know, I'm obsessed with like late night chat shows in America, and I'm obsessed with Conan O'Brien, and he's like my comedy hero. And I wanted to make a podcast that's like got this late night vibe, and it will evolve, definitely. But yeah, I'm glad that you appreciate that, because that's what I've been going for.
I was almost thinking, hang on, they couldn't have done this at night. They're all working.
No, they're all in the morning.
Do you like the state of late night talk shows in America at the moment?
Do you know what? I don't know a huge... Like, I think my knowledge of late night shows has come mainly from listening to Conan O'Brien's podcast, interestingly. Because I've never lived in the States, I've watched clips of late night shows like SNL. I used to watch clips of Conan O'Brien's show, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, like all of those shows. But I think from listening to his podcast religiously, which I am obsessed with him and his podcast, I have learned a lot about like what he went through from SNL to then having his show to taking over from David Letterman, and he was so young, and he like he is such a, I hate saying this, it sounds so cringe, but he's such like avant-garde comedian in my opinion. He's just broken through so many like ideas, and the guests that he gets on all like appreciate him for that much, so I think I've learned it just from listening to that podcast. It's all been like post everything, so now,
and he was a Simpsons writer as well,
and he's just so funny. He's just so funny.
That's interesting. So it's kind of the vintage comedy that you're interested in a way.
Yeah, I am. I'm obsessed with like this, like Steve Martin and Martin Shaw. And I don't know if you watched the documentary about Steve Martin, but
I've meant to actually. Yeah,
is that, it's incredible. That's good, is it? It's incredible. And that and watching that made me not rethink my comedy, but it's like when I watch stuff about like Robin Williams, for example, he's like one of my biggest comedy heroes. It makes me, you know, just like. Think, okay, I can push myself a bit more, because I came to comedy with not much knowledge of comedy. I just started doing stand-up because I thought I'd be quite good at it, but I didn't know a lot about comedy. And then as I'm like growing up and learning more, it's been really fun like taking like older influences and thinking about ways that I can just, I don't know, apply it to my own stand-up and stuff.
It's good. The kind of online thing gives you that extra element then, because you can just do your own sketches, sending up whether it's the tropes of the loud person on the train and the very quiet person trying to shut them up.
Yeah.
Or just bad behaviour in the summer sun and so on.
Yeah. I think it's that. It's like... I like observing myself and like my friends, basically. So observing and taking like ridiculous elements of my personality, my friends' personalities, and then putting them either into sketches or into my stand-up. Like the show that I'm doing, the show that I'm bringing to Dublin, a huge part of this show is about my friends, and it's about like my female friendships and the relationships that I've had throughout my life that have like made me feel so unbelievably supported and safe through, you know, more traumatic things that have happened to me.
Yeah.
And so I like to like poke fun at my friends while also like being like, I'm so lucky that I have them. And I like to poke fun at myself, you know, that's my main thing.
You really do. I'm almost thinking, is that really you in the comedy? How much of you do you and do you think comedians generally put in their stand-up?
I don't know about other people. My stand-up is really very, it's me. Like, it's very honest. And because I think people think that they're getting everything, and obviously they're not getting everything. If you come and watch one of my shows, I'm not telling you everything. I'm holding stuff back because I'm, you know, there's parts of the stories that I'm telling that I don't want people to know, or I'm protecting other people who are involved in the stories, or, you know, some people in my life don't want to be mined for jokes. So a lot of it is what you see is what you get, you know, like I'm quite an open book, and I think that's what's come across on the podcast as well, is I'm quite bad at sort of like concealing information about myself. So I don't know about other people, like a lot of the comedians that I love are the same. I know that Joanne is very much the same, like we sort of mine our own personal lives for material.
You've spoken very openly about your abortion and making that decision, and you wrote a beautiful piece in The Guardian only very recently, just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like June.
Yeah. The decision, first of all, to write that piece, where was your head?
Well, I basically, after my abortion, I was really depressed, and a lot of that was chemical, and I felt like there wasn't enough on the internet to like guide me through what I was going through, because I'd spoken to other people who had gone through similar sort of reactions to abortions as I had. And mine was, like, I was really glad that I could have one and it was the right decision, but I was really depressed afterwards and I felt this sort of, like, permeating sense of grief and I didn't really know, like, where it belonged or how to articulate it. And so I spoke to different people, like one of my best friends who had had an abortion not long before me, and we'd had really similar reactions. And I was just like, it feels weird that there's not, that, like, I was desperate to find like a support group for me to talk to other people, like when I was going through that in sort of January, February of this year. I couldn't find that. So once it started to lift, which it did in like March, April, I was like, okay, well, the show that I knew that I wanted part of the show to be about it because, you know, it's kind of all that I'd thought about and I knew that I had this tour, so I had to write something. And weirdly, the title of my show, we decided before I got pregnant, was Grace Campbell's on Heat because my dog had come on Heat, basically. So I didn't know what to call my show and I was like, I'll just call it Grace Campbell's on Heat. And then like 4 months after I decided the name of the show, I got pregnant and then I was like, okay, well, the title works still for this story. Yeah. So, but when I was thinking about that, when my sort of like sadness started to lift, I thought I really want to write something that's like not funny because the show is like, the show is not, it's not all about an abortion. It's about so many things. It's about growing up. It's about kind of, like I said, my female friendships. But I wanted to write a piece that was what I wanted to read basically in January and February. So that's why I wrote it, because I really needed someone else to say those things to me, like, that I didn't know. And it was amazing. And I like, was just saying to my best friend this morning, I'm still getting so many messages online from people who are going through abortions now, who, yeah, like, have been sent the piece. And that makes me so happy. That's all I really wanted, was for there to be this thing online that could just exist now. And people can say, oh, like, here's this thing that you can read, and it will just make you feel a little bit better about, like, the complicated feelings that you're having about your abortion.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary description, it really is, and it really does give us information we didn't know the rest of the world, I'm saying. I think the key line, the doctor did not prepare you for what was to come.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's complicated because maybe the reason that doctors don't is because they don't want it to seem like they're like trying to put you off of the decision. You know, abortion is such a complicated topic to discuss. Yeah. This is why I was so nervous even doing it. But I think it's important that we like delve deeper into these like complicated issues. But I think had someone warned me, I would have still done it 100% because it was the right thing for me to do at that point in my life. But I would have felt so much less isolated when I did start to feel the things that I felt. Because had someone said, oh, by the way, there's a chance, not 100%, doesn't happen to everyone, as we know. Some people have fine reactions, but there is a chance that you might get, you know, depressed afterwards, you might feel sad, that you might like have feelings of sort of grief or whatever, then I would have felt more normal. It was this horrible feeling that I was like the only person in the world who had had this reaction that made me feel even more kind of like self-loathing.
Yeah. And what should they be saying?
I think a sort of heads up. And also, I think when you, like, for example, if anyone listening to this is having one or knows someone that's having one, like, something that I really wish someone had told me is to, like, take a lot of iron supplements. Like, there are things you can do to support your body in, like, the changes that you're going through. Acupuncture ended up being the life-changing part for me because my hormones were so dysregulated afterwards. So after my abortion, whenever I had a period, I would get really, really sad because I thought, I think my body was confused as to why we were not pregnant anymore, basically.
Right.
And then acupuncture was the thing that just regulated my hormones. So it's like things like that, that, you know, I wish, and I know that some of that is kind of new age, like hippie stuff, but things like that, that I wish that there was maybe more to like online or things for you to know. I mean, yeah. Reddit ended up being my saving grace. Oh, I'd never used Reddit before, and I ended up going on Reddit so much for comfort and for advice.
The Reddit was better than the doctor in this case.
Yeah, 100%.
I like the way that you say it's exactly what you talk about just there, that abortions are not a one size fits all physical and emotional process and affects people in different ways. Some people are okay and so on. Are you okay now? Because this is very recently.
Yeah, I am. I am, actually. I think there was a point in June, July where I thought, is this too soon to be doing a show about it. But having just done Edinburgh, the show is, it's the best show I've ever written. And it's really not like all about an abortion. It's about my dog. It's about my friends. It's about me kind of like realizing how much like I shouldn't do things to please men, basically. Like, the reason I got pregnant was because I conceded in a moment of, you know, not weakness, but just sort of in a moment where I thought, oh, I want to make this man happy. Yeah. And so I think the show is kind of, it's a real journey, and doing it every day in Edinburgh made me feel really, really good and really proud of myself, because it's a really funny show. I was getting standing ovations every day. The reaction I've had is incredible. The messages I've received are amazing. And also the messages I've received from men and from, like, partners of men who have brought their partners and been like, God, like, I'm so glad that I brought him, because now he understands, like, what I had to go through a few years ago. So I think it's good. Like, I want this show to be seen by as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And I'd really encourage people to bring their boyfriends.
Very good. You're coming to the right city. You're coming to Dublin, where we only voted, was it 2018?
I know.
Was the referendum on giving women the right to choose. I mentioned your dad is Alistair Campbell, and you're sick of talking about that. I'm interested who your mum is. We don't hear very much about.
Yeah, my mum, she is lots of things. She was a journalist. My parents met on, like, a journalism training scheme in Devon after university. They were both trainee journalists, and then they worked in Fleet Street together. And then she was a journalist and then started working. When my dad started working for Tony Blair, she started working for Cherie Blair. So they both worked in politics, and she's also a big campaigner for, like, improving state school education in the country.
She was opposed to the war in Iraq, and she resigned over the matter, which I think is extraordinary and forgotten.
Yeah, I know. She's amazing, my mum. She's an incredible person. I'm very lucky to have grown up with her.
Fiona, we should say.
Fiona, yeah. And that's what's so funny in the show. I've got this, like, bit in the show about how I went to state school, and, like, people always think I went to private school because obviously I sound posh. And weirdly, I've only started to sound more posh since I started doing comedy. My accent's changed since I started doing comedy. I don't know what it is. I think it's that I've started impersonating the characters that I used to do. My accent's definitely become more posh. But there's a bit in the show about that, because it's like, I think the presumption that people always have about me is that I'm like a private school girl. And that's one of the things that offends me and my mum the most, because I was raised to think that, like, private schools were really, really bad for society.
So the opposite, basically. Yeah.
And so then it's so annoying, because I really want to, like, defend myself, but then I come across as so sort of annoying and tone deaf.
Grace Campbell, I wish you had more time, because I really enjoyed our chat. Thanks so much. I want to say to people, by the way, if you've been affected by issues raised in our discussion this morning, and if you're dealing with an unplanned pregnancy, contact the My Options free phone line, 1800 828 010. I'll give it out again before we go. Grace Campbell, you're in Dublin, Liberty Hall Theatre, on the 25th of October.
So yes, around. I look forward to it.
Look forward to that. And try not to sound too posh when you come to Dublin. Good luck. Enjoy. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
From the North, Tech Studio, followed by your message to 80889.
Hugh Wallace is with us in studio, one of the great voices of television, architect. Well, they call you design legend on Home of the Year, don't they?
Of course they do. Yes, that's what I am, Wallace. Did you not know that?
I was thinking, is he not an architect? Or something?
Oh, no, I am an architect. I'm a qualified architect out of Bolton Street Tech, and I loved going to Bolton Street.
When was that, can I ask?
Oh, in 76 to 80.
God, you look extraordinarily well. 67, I think it says.
Yes, 67. Yeah. Wow, yeah. No, I was born in 56. The best bit is getting the bus pass.
68.
I love the bus pass.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. I adore public transport. I've been converted.
You make it sound like you're kind of riding public transport as a little novelty for yourself.
It is. I get on the top of the bus and I love it. And I look out the window and I think, isn't this wonderful? And you can see so much. You can see into people's windows from the top
of the
bus. That's
a really good... I can see why you would enjoy
it. Yeah,
the top
I love
of the
it.
Bus.
You can see, have they got the master bedroom correct? You know, I just love it.
Did you come here by bus?
No, I didn't. No, no.
But you didn't drive yourself?
I did.
You did? Oh,
I drove as well. Very good.
Because the last time we were here, which was February, I can't remember, yeah, home of the year, you mentioned you had a nice vintage Mercedes car, which you were doing up at the time.
I'm still doing it up.
Oh, but
everything takes time. It's like trying to build my house with Martin. We're still building it, you know, three years later.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
Not living in it, obviously.
No, not yet. But we will by Christmas. You know that one? We'll be there by Christmas. Yeah. That's Martin
the
and
Christmas
I.
Mad people.
Yeah, that's it.
Martin is your husband and partner of
38
years?
Yeah.
My God.
Of bliss, as you can imagine. You know, those little ups and downs.
Is it a period property, your house?
It's an old two-story 1910 cottage, workers' cottage. Great, love it. And I love the street. We live in this fabulous neighbourhood. Amazing sense of community. Real old dubs. And Pat, who lives up the road, comes down with a sweeping brush on a Saturday in the bleach to clean my section of the street.
Why is he doing...
What? She does. She comes down.
So why is she cleaning...
No, no, I have to do my section. She comes down with
the street brush.
Everybody has to clean their section of the street.
I presume there are no buses on this route.
Oh, absolutely not.
You don't want people looking into...
No.
Looking into the master bedroom.
No, no. But it's amazing. And that's where I think we've missed the opportunity in Ireland. That there's a super article in the Connacht... it's not the Tribune, it's a posh one. It's the Telegraph.
Yes.
Connacht Telegraph.
Connacht isn't even what they might call it.
Oh, Connacht. Connacht. Anyway, I think, you know, that must have been the Protestant paper. Being the Telegraph. Do you know what I mean?
I didn't expect to go into the historic origins of regional newspapers.
I just love all that.
There's a super article. Yeah.
Yeah, Robert is a young guy who's saying he has to get out of Castlebar because it's depressing. And I know Castlebar, and unfortunately it is depressing.
Yeah, it is.
But to me, if you look at that and you get great examples, Clonakilty was a dump 25 years ago, and now it's spectacular, it's fabulous. They got their act together.
There, yeah.
They've done up the street, they got the council to pay for the paint, they've done up all the buildings. Chamber of Commerce are really positive, great shops, and just from somewhere you'd try and get through and get out of, now you stop and there's a good morning in it.
Yeah.
And that's all about spending money in the town. But even in places like Clonakilty, people don't still live over the shops.
No.
And I think it's such a shame.
So Castlebar, it had a very bad crash, didn't it? And
it did,
a lot of the town closed.
Yeah, but, you know, and people don't live in Castlebar over the shop.
Yeah.
And there's that horrendous car park at the back of the main street. Do you know that?
But you can see the space.
But you see, if there were 300 families living there, that would bring £12 million right into the city
centre. You'd have the thriving cafes and...
Have to get our head around this and not be snobs.
I've never accused you of being snob. Are you saying Irish people are too snobby to live over the shop?
Absolutely.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
If it was incentivised, they'd be at it.
No, they think, I want my bungalow, you know, down the road and half acre.
Nothing wrong with that. You did a show on that as well.
I did. I love the bungalows. but I'm just saying there's huge opportunities. The Great House Revival is part of that.
I'll get my blood pressure up now if you start talking about the housing crisis, because it's staring us in the face, isn't it? All the buildings empty all around the place, and we've had years and years.
Yeah, so in the census there was 160,000 vacant properties.
Wow.
But actually, if you have a building where there's a shop in it and nothing over it, it's not vacant. So you can add on probably another 60,000.
You're dead right, yeah.
You can add on another 60,000.
Have you spoken to anyone in politics about this?
In what?
In politics.
Politics?
Yeah.
Actually, they don't listen.
They don't listen.
They have their own agenda.
And they say, you have yours. Come here, the next season, Great House Revival, it's going to... You start filming it now in the autumn winter, is it?
Yeah.
So you're looking for people.
Looking for brave souls who are doing up amazing buildings, big, small, anything in between, cow sheds, love it all. Preferably before 1915.
Before 1950.
Yeah, okay. would be great, because it's sort of like a period home, and it's also showing what you can really do. And the new series goes out now in early autumn or early spring, and that's fabulous. And there are these like amazing people who do extraordinary work. Extraordinary.
It's
love
the most stressful TV show, I think.
Because, do you?
Yeah, it's just they've taken on such a job, and I'm nervous for them.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't get the end point, obviously, because you've got limited filming time.
Correct.
I go, you come back to those other people sometime and tell us.
Well, we'd love to.
Are they frozen
to death?
We'd love
to. Would you put in a good word to them upstairs, if you wouldn't mind? We'd love to do a show on
nobody
a
listens
repeat.
To me, for God's sake.
You know what I mean? And the great thing is about that show is just the tenacity of the individuals. But it also shows that if you're willing to roll up your sleeves, you can genuinely end up with a home that's affordable.
Because you are like a psychologist in many ways through that show, aren't you? You come in and you encourage them, but you also, you're looking to the camera at, oh God, look, don't look up, look at the walls, they're the endless problems.
The best was Sully and Mary Clare down in Cork, who bought the house. And I said, did you get an engineer in, you know, to have a look at, see if it was all right? And she said, didn't matter whether it was made out of matchsticks, we were buying it.
You must be then sad as you're going around the country looking at the really dilapidated great houses that the roofs fell in on 20, 30 years ago and are disappeared.
Well, you see, because you do the show, you drive up a lovely boreen or road, and there's just, we're littered with houses. Littered.
And people who still want to do them.
Oh, yeah, people do. And the grants are super. Now, the government need to up the level of grants. By another, really, you get 75 grand for a vacant or derelict. Sorry, 70, but it should go up to 100.
And is that the year you're talking about? It has to be pre 1915?
No, it's any house that's been vacant. I think I'm not going to, even 15 years ago, if it's been vacant for 2 years, entitled to get the grant.
Vacant for 2 years,
Years. And if it's a bit of structural work, you get an additional 20, but that 20 should be 60. Grand if you have to put a new roof on. But those grants are fabulous. But there's actually, for a new first-time buyer, unfortunately, the grants are orientated towards new homes. They need to be extended so they're orientated towards all buildings.
Yeah.
And the grants that are available, there are probably up to 10 grants, but you have to find out about each one.
And then you have to front up the money, which is
But the grants are still fabulous.
It's better than nothing, says you. Our old houses, period property, are they not terribly impractical? And we should tear them all down and build lovely, sustainable, AAA energy rated buildings at this stage.
That's why I think people get asthma. Do you know, in the old days, you had a draft.
Are we getting cookies?
No,
medical
you get draft. You got draft. You need a draft. You need air. You didn't do all
You need the free flowing air.
Oh, you do, yeah. But did you have a draft?
Damp, though.
Did you have draft in your
house? Of course, it was a bungalow.
There you go. You had a draft. in through the front door, out through the back.
My favourite thing with the bungalow is in the wintertime, when we did have winters back then.
Yes,
the
I remember
change,
those.
The condensation would freeze on the inside.
Yes.
Very Christmassy
yes,
effect.
Yes, it was lovely. Yeah. And did you have a super sore?
No, we super didn't. We were a solid fuel heated home. Oh, yes.
No super sir.
No.
The super
that was
sir
a city were, thing, really, wasn't
no,
it?
No, they were down in your bungalow. And the great thing about a super sir was to put a gallon and a half of water into the air. And that's why. Do you remember the windows with the water streaming down the windows?
It's like steam room, basically.
So we're looking for fabulous properties.
Okay, very good. This is the call out.
Yeah, call out for the Great House Revival property at animotv.ie. And we will love to follow your journey and be part of it. And I'll throw in the odd halfpence worth of advice. And what I really love are those people who buy an old property and then put a modern extension to the rear.
Yummy, modern
extension to the rear of the home.
You love that.
I love that.
That kind of clash of modern. Yeah, it's you gorgeous, love it. Isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a fabulous one over in the west of Ireland, which I'm doing the reveal of in September. And I'm all excited because it's magical. It's just magical.
Delicious.
It is delicious.
To use another Wallace-ism.
Indeed.
Because isn't there that lovely church on, is it the Liberties, Pierce Lyons Distillery, where they have a glass steeple?
Isn't that wonderful? That was just an amazing job.
That was
just wonderful, wonderful reuse.
That makes you very excited.
I love all that. And I think that, you know, we have to be much more open to what buildings become. Because, you know, there's huge opportunity. You know the way when you go to America and they've got those lofts and they're like 1,200 or 1,500 square feet? That's what we're missing.
Big giant warehouse kind of living.
Yeah, all that good stuff. Office blocks.
We've buildings everywhere.
Yeah, but you see, the other thing is that we don't understand. So there's 100 and according to the Census Statistics Office, there's an additional 149,000 people in the country this year.
That's right.
This year. Germany has as they need. For that, for the people who just arrived
in
the door, 62,000 homes.
But we have the guts of 200,000 vacant properties.
Yeah, more.
Vacant homes.
More. And so there's a whole, you know, we need to really get those plates spinning. The government need to get the plates spinning, deliver homes. Like, if you think there's a house crisis today, wait for 5 years. It'll be pale into insignificance to what it is.
You're right, but you're making us all sad.
Well,
you need to
shouldn't
be sad. You need to meet the Minister for Housing.
I do. I'm going to be the dictator. The Empress.
Some attached,
maybe, the Empress. The Empress.
51551 is the text. Oliver, Castlebar is wonderful. I'm out enjoying the wonderful surroundings at the moment. That's from Alison. Well, this is Hugh Wallace's point. Castlebar is wonderful. He just wishes... There were people living over the shop.
I just want people to live over the shop. Castle Bar got decimated. It's like Edenderry because all the Dunns is at one end of the town and Lidl and Aldi and Tesco are at the other end there's nothing in the middle.
They don't come into the town. Martin and Drumcondra wants you to know that you can go to the Aran Islands on your bus pass now.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, that's true. I can get the ferry. Yeah. Oh, that would be wonderful. The Aran Islands are amazing. I always remember going over there. And there's a local black taxi driver who has perfect Irish in the local accent. And it's fantastic.
He would be the taxi driver, I presume.
Indeed.
Love Hugh Wallace, but tell him the jumper knotted over the shoulder is not a good look. Love him, repeats Brian in Dublin.
I totally agree. Yeah, Martin has told me I can't bring the jumper with me.
Is that right?
Yep, the jumper is cancelled. I was going, will I put scarves on again? He said, no, I can't have scarves. But I have delicious new outfit of the most wonderful colours.
Is this for the Great House Revival stint?
Yes, fabulous.
Very, very bright colours. Against the period Hume, you see, which would be the modern
meets the old. And the old Hume.
Do you keep the jumper then for Home of the Year? Is that the lemony jumpers. And
indeed, orange, red.
Where do you buy those jumpers?
Patrick, down on Clarendon Street.
Very good.
I get them there. He's fabulous.
Interesting.
I was wondering, I was going to bring you one in today. I thought we'd do a mix and match.
Yes, actually, I should have done that.
We should have
done that. Because he's not wearing his jumper today, Martin. Or it wasn't Martin.
And I also did, just the Leaving Cert is out at the moment. And obviously people yesterday got their opportunity to go and go to college. But I really would ask people to think about the construction industry. Chadwick's have done a great piece of research into what people think about the construction industry. Very interesting. Lots of people think it's a great job, but then they don't take the step. And a lot of people think that the construction industry isn't well paid. I can tell you it's anything but.
Yeah, it's daily rate.
Daily rate.
Endless work.
Also, you can be your own boss. You can travel. You'll have knowledge and experience. And because of the lack of housing in this year in Ireland, you will have a job for life.
I know, but they're still building bloody offices, empty offices.
Even more of them. You want to, I'm just
incredible.
Amazed. I drove past an office block and it has a big sign saying 182,000 square feet available. And it's been sitting there for 3 years.
Well, there's an office block not far from here, which has been sitting there for 15 years, completely empty. And but anyway, if only we were let at it.
Hugh, we'd sort it all out. We have to sort it out, Oliver, you and I.
Hugh, I am living in a cottage built 1912. It is divine. I made my turf shed into an outdoor room. It is small, no grandeur, but a home. And that's from Moira.
Dead right. Love all that. I love the use of outbuildings. And what's even nicer is you don't have to connect them to the house. You know, it's about that... there's one in one of the Home of the Years, there was the living side of the house was on one side of the courtyard, and you had to walk across to the bedrooms on the other side
with
your slippers, umbrella, and your wetsuit.
Not sure about that.
Well, it was actually, it was fabulous. Yeah. But I just think that we, you know, there are real opportunities out there. People don't need to live in huge houses. And that's what amazes me. You know, the one where you've seen the grandparents, what was a thatched cottage and the tin roofs on.
Yeah.
And then you've got the 70s bungalow beside it. And so the first house is now abandoned. And now they're building a two-story Georgian edifice at the back. And now the bungalow is going to be abandoned.
Do you hate those kind of phony Georgian houses with the small windows?
Yeah, all badly proportioned, sitting on top of the hill.
Enormous.
Yeah, outrage. I always remember in Inishowen going over, driving over the middle of Inishowen, turned a corner on top of a hill, and the two brothers had built identical two-story Georgian houses plonked in the middle of nowhere with what I love is, the you know, the tarmac that goes all the way around?
Yeah, that's very, very
I never
handy.
Understand that. You know, the tarmac going all the way around.
That's very expensive. It should be gravel, is that what you're
No, it shouldn't go around. Why does it go around the house? Why does it go around the house?
Park around the back end.
Yeah, that's right. So you never use the front door. I just love it. I just love it.
I also love the fact that there's a porch I was slapped on to.
Oh, I love the porch.
Even though the original, the porch is an addition, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I love the porch.
Gigantic porch. As well. So you don't even see the fan window in
there. Not at all. That's all gone. What would you want to see?
But we're not snobby.
Oh, no, never.
No. We're just judgy.
No, as mummy always said, salt of the earth. That's the way I describe myself. I describe myself as salt of the earth.
And you were an only child, weren't you?
I was, so I'm definitely salt of the earth.
Were you a closet only child?
I was, yeah.
Oh, very nice.
Silver spoon, it was very difficult.
Reminds me of Bill Whelan, who we did a few weeks ago, and he's an only child as well. Yeah. Very close relationship with parents always.
Yes, yeah.
The only child.
Yeah, yeah. But it's very interesting being an only child because Martin's one of 11. And the shock of going down to that house and the front door opens and the back door opens, and it's like being in this traffic jam. And
endless nieces, nephews, coming out of everywhere.
Yeah, the 82... close family relations down in Thurles. And it's very odd to be an only child when you go down there. And you just wonder, the dynamics are amazing.
How different are you because of being an only child compared to...
Oh, well, apparently I suffer from only child syndrome.
What's that?
Me.
Can't be dealing with other people at
Not all. Not at all, no. What's their problems?
You don't care anyway, no, that's good. You can only get to two of the Aran Islands with your travel pass. You can't go to Inishman.
Oh, what's going on there?
Any thoughts on splitting very large homes into two dwellings? We live in a fabulous park. Average house size is 2.5 to 3,000 square feet. Most people in park on the natural road are the empty nesting. Nowhere to trade down to. Don't want this five-bedroom home anymore into the future. This is going to be a growing issue for people.
It is, yeah, but that's what should be allowed to happen. Of course, they should be able to be divided up. And it's like, and that's a problem, because then all of a sudden you're into fire regulations, building control. And so what we do in Ireland is we put barriers up.
Yeah.
And in legislation, so yes, you can do something, but you can't actually do it because you can't comply with the regulations. And that's one of the big problems of living over the shop. And that has to be addressed. Really has to be addressed. And it's not. So there are very small tweaks.
Yeah, but you have very specific ones, which is good.
Which would have a huge impact. And also we should ban anybody building a semi-detached house in the field.
Right, okay.
There should be no...
A detached house, you mean?
Nothing. There should be nothing in a field anywhere in the country. There's so much. So at the moment, there are thousands of houses sitting there finished, and the developer can't hand them over to a purchaser because there's no electricity or there's no water.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes.
Whereas all those services are in our cities, in Dublin, in Cork, Limerick, Galway, Waterford. They're all there.
Just plug into them, build
8-story apartment blocks of high quality with 3-bedroomed units within them.
You don't have to ship wires and pipes way out to the
correct customer. And the school's already there. If you drive around in our towns and look at the schools saying enrolment, because they are looking for students,
they're in there. Okay. You speak sense, but culturally we want the big house with the land all around it.
We do. We want 3,500 square feet or 4,000 square feet.
They'll be sitting vacant. So if you have someone you want to embark on the restoration of any kind for the Great House Revival, Animo TV, you can email property@animotv.ie.
Yep.
Hugh Wallace, has been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Oliver.
Good luck with the endless house renovation.
I'm just so excited.
Who's any good as an architect? Surely be done by now. Thank you, Hugh. Back after these.
Email oliver@rte.ie.
Can't wait. Yeah. Oh, they go back. Yeah. Buying pencil cases and the smell of the new pencil case. And then oh my God, I'd love to be back there. Jamie Duffy, do you remember your first day in school? Jamie Duffy now joins us, by the way, composer, musician. How are you doing?
I'm not doing too bad. A long time ago now.
It's not that long ago. You're Gen Z.
Primary school or secondary school?
Well, first, I think primary school, yeah, would be your first day.
Yeah.
Actually, funny, I remember primary school, not secondary school. How are you on that?
Secondary school, it's all a blur to me. I remember primary school much clearer. Tiny glasses, tiny hair, horrible uniform. Yeah.
Utter chaos. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the kind of smells. Do you remember the smells of school? I remember Mala.
When you go back in to vote, that's when it all comes going flushing back.
You're dead right.
Well, that's what I experienced. Anyway, you go in and you're like, oh goodness, I'm back here.
I remember having a fight on my first day in primary school. Someone slammed a bag and said, this is my seat, you can't have it.
Just straight in with the fight and all of it.
That's, yeah, it was.
Wow.
South Monaghan, you're North Monaghan.
Never get that up in Glasslock, ever.
Glasslock. Oh, that would be a tiny school up there, would it?
Yeah, there only eight would have been eight in my class.
That would have been lovely. Ash, there was 20 or 30 of us.
Oh, no.
In the scheme. Yeah, no, it was utter chaos. Yeah. Jamie, you're going to actually open some music for us this morning, I believe.
Yes.
And Solace is what you've played on Radio 1 very often because that's the big hit.
Yeah.
Am I misremembering, but was there an association with Ukraine or people listening to it in Ukraine at the outbreak of the war?
Yeah, there was one particular lady who played it. She played it in BBC News. She'd said that she had used the piano to drown out the sound of bombs when she was living in Ukraine. And when BBC News went and she performed her tune, she performed Solace. This was at BBC News at 10.
Incredible.
So. And I had no prior warning. I was just sort of sitting there and it was a crazy experience.
You're just sitting there watching them?
Yeah, yeah.
And this was the very early stages of
Ukraine. Yes, just around the start of the invasion, yeah.
2022.
Yeah.
And they're talking about your song.
Yeah, she was just saying that she'd used the piano to distract her from the sounds outside and she sat down and played and it was Solace that she played.
How big did Solace become in the end then?
I mean, it's approaching 100 million streams, which is kind of crazy for just a solo piano piece and an independent release at the time. So not in my wildest dreams did I think that could happen.
Instrumental piece of music.
Yeah.
How do you describe your music? As a blend or something? Is it?
Yeah, genre blending is what people throw at me. I usually let other people decide what they want it to be, but neoclassical is a good umbrella.
Neoclassical.
Neoclassical.
It almost sounds like a wine or something.
Sounds a little bit too highbrow now, but it's nice.
What are you going to play for us then this morning to open up proceedings?
Yes, I'm going to play Taurus, T-O-R-U-S, my single from my latest album that was out last week. So.
Is that, is Taurus a Ascuelga?
No, it's not, actually, it? I'll tell you, it's the recently discovered, this is a bit of a sidetrack, but last year, they discovered that the basking sharks off the west coast of Ireland swim in these circles while they're mating. And they just swim for hours, even days upon days. And they only discovered this and confirmed it off the coast of Mayo last year. And it's called a Taurus. So I was quite inspired by that and the natural world. And the links to the sort of circularity of life, you know, quite often. So that was what this song is about.
It sounds like you're going to put us in a lovely mood. Taurus, of course, would be, Australia would be a journey, wouldn't it? But Jamie Duffy, you take it away then. Taurus.
Thank you.
You've some talent.
Thank you.
Every time I hear you play piano, it sounds like there are three pianos.
Well, I appreciate that.
That was a beautiful place. We'll have a wee chat, will we?
Yep.
We're going to take a break, first of all. 51551. Some lovely messages coming in on schools, actually, in the meantime. I'm 60-ish, very proud of my flip phone. Never bothered with the smart one. Not missing out much, says Anne-Marie Kennedy. And other school ones. We'll come back to them later. But 51551, keep the text coming in. And we're going to have a chat with Jamie Duffy after the break.
Text 51551. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Jamie Duffy is with us, as we said. He's a fine composer. He's from County Monaghan. He's going on tour soon. Jamie, you were handed a tin whistle in school. That's how music begins for you, does it?
Yeah, like many people, I was handed a tin whistle and shoved into the staff room with the eight of us in the class. Forced to learn sort of Frère Jacques, and as you do, and just approach things that way. I never studied in any music conservatoire or anything like that. It's all very organic, I guess.
And it's kind of everyone doing it together as well, isn't it?
Everyone doing it together, not taking it seriously at the start, and not taking it seriously until it just is upon you then to take it seriously out of nowhere.
It usually does have to be in a family, doesn't it, the music, and it is in yours.
Yeah, music's, you know, one of the focal points in my family, especially like on my mother's side. You know, my grandfather, my grandmother, very musical people, as is my mother and everybody, so...
Tell us about your granddad. Is he from Scotland, by the way?
Yes, he's from the Gallagate in Glasgow. He's going to be coming on tour with me for some of the dates. He's actually getting on his first flight in 45 years to come to Utrecht to do a few tunes. He was in the show band scene. So, and then he retired out of it. So now he didn't expect himself to be, you know, forced back into it, I guess.
Is that how he comes to Monaghan then, with the show bands?
He came to Monaghan. Well, actually, there's an interesting story. So his father was from Donegal, and then they moved, like many people, to Scotland. Mm-hmm. And then when his father died young, and then they moved to Monaghan.
Oh, right.
And then he met my grandmother, and that's the rest is history.
So. Wow. It's rare they get to come back like that.
Yeah, 100%. Well, his father passed away, and... a really interesting point is he actually was talking to his cousins in Donegal there 2 weeks ago, and I'm playing in Gweedore, and he had never known this. They told him that he had a twin, and it's his cousin who died 6 weeks after he was born. So he only found that out 2 weeks ago.
He only discovered
that he had a twin. His mum had a twin, but never sort of told him. And the twin died 6 weeks after. It lived 6 weeks. But it took for his cousins in Donegal to tell him that. So it'll be a nice show to do in Gweedore. And he's written a song about Donegal and all of that. So we'll do it up there.
Incredible. Patrick McGee's.
Packy McGee,
that's what you call him. And is he afraid of flying? Is that why he hasn't flown? Or is he just so fond of...
He says that he just prefers taking the scenic route, but I don't know. That's what he says.
Does that mean he takes long ferries?
I've sat on sleeper trains through Europe into Croatia at times. Like, that's how we have often done it. So
I'm always jealous of those people who get to live their life nice and slowly.
Yeah.
You compose music. That's the difference, isn't it? Because we have lots of musicians across Ireland. It's very difficult to compose and to come up with something that makes people sit up and take notice. How long have you been doing that?
I mean, I've sort of always been doing it especially since I learned really how to play the piano, and then I finished learning and then I got to do my own thing. It's always been sort of second nature to me. It's been something that I've loved doing. I don't know whether it's because if you compose, you can't really make many mistakes with your own music, and you can do what you want. And it's lovely to create these soundscapes and stories, and especially in an instrumental piece of music. Like, that's, as I said, is a piece inspired by Basking Sharks, and getting to do that, you know, through orchestras and pianos is a really fun way to go about life.
As a composer, do you go to some of the fancy schools or any of that? Or
no, absolutely not. I studied politics up in Queens, and this all happened while I was up there. As you talked about Solace, that happened when I was there, and it sort of pushed me in a different direction with life altogether. I never envisioned a career in music, and a career in music isn't exactly easy, and it's not easy a lot of the time, but it's, as I said, it's a really nice way to go about life, you know, just getting to create sounds and music and hopefully having people relate to it and enjoy it.
It's an unusual... I was really surprised, I remember, when you told me you chose politics.
Mm.
and went up to Belfast to study it.
Yes.
Were you fascinated in politics? Is there a politics in school? That was what you were literally thinking about as a career.
I was thinking, yeah, perhaps sort of a third secretary, then work my way up, that sort of thing. Which was...
There are novelists in the government buildings.
Well, honestly, that was always the plan. But I was interested in it, fascinated more so in current affairs and that sort of thing. And then when I got there, I realised... You don't really study, you know, current affairs. You study, obviously, you know, why politics is politics and that sort of thing. And I liked it, but I didn't love it. And I realised quickly that what I loved was music, so.
Yeah, you're very good at it. The message coming in here, like, for example, someone just texts in, Jamie, wow, wow, wow.
Thank you.
That piece, Taurus, was beautiful. Was Jamie influenced by the late Micheál O'Sullivan?
Well, I always love when that name's put to me because he's such an icon, was such an icon, and his music, you know, especially with the piano and the sort of trad meets classical, he's definitely a staple figure in my own influences, 100%.
It's really cool when we can hear sort of Irish traditional influence, but it's still a piano.
Yeah. Yeah,
what is that we're hearing?
I would guess it's ornamentation and familiar sort of chordal structures. But I mean, a lot of my chordal structures are sort of pop, you know, influenced too. So it's opening classical music up to a new group of people. I think a lot of people think that classical music is boxed off for a particular person from a particular air code, maybe sort of thing. And you know, a little village of Monaghan, and you know, and we're selling out dates in the concert hall, and it's Mama Cass said you got to make your own kind of music, and that's something I've always done. And I think if you like listening to it, you should. It's for you then, you know.
Yeah, you just sit there in the theatres and bask in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the basking sharks.
Like the basking
sharks.
That's
a terrible, terrible pun. The first time I heard you was you were playing music in Castle Leslie.
Yes, we go way back, Oliver.
We to the hotel. I nearly discovered you. Now, a sensible person would go, sign that kid up.
Should have managed me.
Absolutely, get the money out of him. Whereas I was going, oh no, I want him to play at our wedding. Yeah. But what age were you then? That was 2019.
I was 18.
You were 18. And had you done the Leaving Cert? You were coming up to the Leaving Cert, I think.
Coming up to the... And then, I didn't know at the time, non-existent Leaving Cert because of COVID and everything. But I worked there for 4 or 5 nights a week playing piano for 3-4 hours each night, which was... Talk about experience, like, and I feel like I'm sort of numb now to crowds. I can really, like, going into the concert hall doesn't bother me, but I think it took
great learning,
the exposure therapy of working in a restaurant, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week, I guess.
In among all the diners, because I just heard this piano, and this is the most incredible piano playing I've ever heard. Why is no one else looking around? Initially, I thought this has to be recorded, but there you were. Yeah. And because of COVID and everything, took a couple of years extra for us to actually do the wedding. Yes. But you honoured it. So thanks very much.
Had a great time doing it.
Thanks for doing that. You don't do weddings anymore.
That's honestly the last wedding I've done.
Oh, so, thanks. Yeah. Jeez, we're very lucky. Yeah. Again, I should have exploited you to take a cut for forevermore. Someone's asking as well, do you have a CD out? Says BH and Furhouse.
I have the Spotify Apple Music equivalent, but no CD. I have a vinyl. You can buy a vinyl online for Solace, but it's solely Solace at the minute. But
that's an EP.
The EP's online, but the vinyl is just a single.
The single, okay, yeah. Very good. But in time. Is there news on that front then?
Well, we're looking at getting vinyls pressed with my album, sort of my debut sort of mini EP album came out last week. It's called On a Wing, and it was a real labour of love. I recorded it with Atle Orvarsson, who's one of the biggest film producers in the world, and just for somebody like that to take me under their wing up in Iceland and between Iceland and London was amazing and just a wonderful experience. So
He's done work for big shows, hasn't he?
Silo, and he won the BAFTA there for the composing BAFTA there last 2-3 months ago. He's nominated for an Emmy now, and he also is just a fan of me. And as I said, for somebody who didn't take the stereotypical approach to all of this, it's really humbling and just makes me smile.
When you go into that world, do they kind of are they expecting you to list out a load of schools with French names?
Yeah, no, they're so scary. This is the thing, most of them are scary, and I've been in that situation where they're like, well, maybe you should do a little bit less of an Irish sort of thing and take less of an Irish take. And I've had that said to me, but he sat me down and he was like, Jamie, you know, I can't do an Icelandic accent, I'd be cancelled. But he was like, you gotta do it, man, you gotta just make your own kind of music. And that's also something I told myself, as I said. So it's nice to be reassured like that.
What good advice. Just do what's in your head.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to be just doing pastiches.
Yeah, because I think you can often try to fit yourself into what other people are doing, or you know, what's trending or what you think people might like. And, you know, that's when you lose track of the artistry.
You mentioned, because you said there's a lot of pop influence in yours. You're a big Lana Del Rey fan, aren't you?
Oh, massive. Is she listening? Like, honestly, I'm
But like, you would potentially be, obviously, be able to meet her at some point, because you're in the industry now. So.
Well, this is it. She's really taken to neoclassical music herself, honestly, because one of her latest albums, she has this fabulous pianist called Riopi. He's a French pianist who's doing music not unlike myself, and I'm working with his agent at the minute, and we're put on shows in France. But so it's like you're never too far from these people.
Yeah.
So please God,
you're in the same aura, basically.
Please God
is the idea. Is that what you want to do?
I would love to obviously develop this actual artistic side of things, and also then with the film, composing with this genre is a massive thing. Like, it's, you know, getting to create soundscapes for narratives and for plots and stories that are on screen is a really cool and, you know, fun and challenging thing to do. And it's something that I really want to get my hands on.
That's what your Icelandic collaborator does.
This is, and he does it very well. So, yeah.
What was he? What shows was he working on?
Atlio Varson. He worked. He Silo, and he's all the sort of shows like Chicago Med, LAPD, all that, those sort of shows. And he has so many, you know, composers working with him. He's got like 15 studios or something crazy. So a top dog. So that's the aim.
Yeah, that would be the kind of cool place to be, wouldn't it? Yeah. Is there good money in that? Often the
film composing.
Yeah.
Definitely more so on the film composing side, as opposed to being an artistic or an artist with music and Spotify. I mean, we all know what Spotify pay. Yeah, absolutely infamous. Nothing. So, I mean, if I had the success of Solace, say, 30 years ago, maybe I could afford a house in Docky or somewhere. But
you're dead right,
absolutely not at this point in 2024. And, you know, musicians are crying out for things to be changed. So maybe it's time that, you know, the powers that be take a real good luck at what they can do to help the situation, because we're talking 0.002/3 cent per stream, which is crazy. Do the math, you know what I mean?
Of a cent, 0.000 point of a cent.
Of a cent, yes.
Yeah, of 1 cent. Yeah. Oh my God, that's crazy. I like how you're melding your politics there into the music.
Gently.
Do you have strong views on politics, by the way? Because a lot of politics going on in the world right now.
Yeah, I do.
Well, you're in your early 20s.
I'm in
Gen
my
Z,
early 20s. I wish that getting a house in Dublin was much easier than it has been. And I wish that my friends could afford to study up in Dublin and live easier, you know. It's a really difficult time, I think, to be in your 20s, and especially being a musician, a completely unpredictable lifestyle. And I don't know how things will look, say, in the future. So, and Ireland needs to protect its artists too. I mean, like, we are a country that creates probably the best music, in my opinion, and best musicians. Yeah, it's very hard for us to make livings and to live in the centre of culture that is Dublin. So, yeah. You know.
And the most important thing for people who you don't get paid for your licensed work very well on Spotify, at all. So people need to go out and watch you live.
This is how you support artists. You go out, you buy tickets. It's all going back to the good old days. You buy the merch, you buy the tickets, and you come to the shows. And
all the dates. Do you want to throw out some of the locations, by the way? You know you're starting for some reason in Cavan.
In the beautiful Cavan, starting in the Rammer, which actually is gas, and I can't wait. That's
just been done up.
Yes, just been done up.
The Rammer Theatre.
Yeah, next Thursday, and then straight down to Cork. And Dublin sold out. I think Cork's pretty much sold out. Clare sold out. Monaghan gone. So you can see me in Donegal, Limerick, Mayo, Kilkenny, doing a beautiful church there. And I'll be over in London and then Paris and then off to, I think, Istanbul soon. So
where's the best place to get you? It's online.
JamieDuffyMusic.com.
JamieDuffyMusic.com for all the dates, especially if you fly up to Utrecht.
Yes.
Good luck to Paddy McGee on the
flight.
Well,
good luck to him indeed.
Hope he doesn't have more than two drinks in the airport.
Well, he's teetotal, so that'll be a shock to everybody.
You're going to play us out with one more tune. What is this one called?
I'm just going to do a little bit of an a cappella melody on this one. It's called Eerie, and I recorded it over in Sweden last year with Peter Sandberg. So It's an a cappella Tin Whistle tune.
An absolute pleasure. Thanks a million for coming in to us. Thank you. Enjoyed the chat. And sure, we'll chat to you again. Good luck on the tour.
Appreciate it.
Eerie. Now to the big interview with Kamala Harris. Is the first one she has done, of course, since she became a candidate. Also the first interview she's done since the 24th of June. That's over 2 months ago. She was seated alongside her running mate Tim Walz as a crutch. The New York Times says she parried questions from Dana Bash, who was the interviewer, without causing herself political harm or providing herself a significant boost. So kind of a neutral result at the end. She was methodical, risk averse, trying to survive, and advances now to the next round, which is the debate with former President Trump on the 10th of September. How did she do? Well, we'll break it down for you. It lasted 27 minutes. It was pre-recorded, and it was very difficult to get under the vibes and get to the substance of Kamala Harris, if there is anything there. And the jury is well and truly out. Here is the Veep at her most evasive in the interview. This is the host, Dana Bash, asked her a very specific and direct question. And there are 67 days to go to the election in America. And she really didn't know the answer to this. Here is how she got on with it.
If you are elected, what would you do on day one in the White House?
Well, there are a number of things. I will tell you, first and foremost, one of my highest priorities is to do what we can to support and strengthen the middle class. When I look at the aspirations, the goals, the ambitions of the American people, I think that people are ready.
And she goes on and she kind of waffles there for 2 minutes and doesn't really say anything she's going to do on day one at all. Like she keeps going on and on. 90 seconds, actually, to be fully accurate. So Dana Bash of CNN gives it one more go.
Page on that.
So what would you do day one?
Day one, it's going to be about, one, implementing my plan for what I call an opportunity economy. I've already laid out a number of proposals in that regard, which include what we're going to do to bring down the cost of everyday goods, what we're going to do to invest in America's small businesses, what we're going to do to invest in families, for example, extending the child tax credit to $6,000 for families for the first year of their child's life to help them buy a car seat, to help them buy baby clothes, a crib. There's the work that we're going to do that is about investing in the American family around affordable housing, a big issue in our country right now.
There you go. Big broad brush strokes. And she waffles on again. There's the thing about the babies, but J.D. Vance is also promising the same thing. And it's kind of it's like asking someone in your house to wash the dishes and they say, you know, I want all dishes to have the opportunity to be clean, and I absolutely aspire that no plate, no mug or ramekin should go unwashed in this country. But in the meantime, I'm just going to watch Only Murders in the Building on TV. Thank you very much. And Kamala Harris, she managed to become even more VP in this interview because she has a habit of talking pure twaddly gibberish. Here she is when she was pressed about her changes of policy position on things like fracking and immigration. Now, just a quick recap. In 2019, she was running for president, of course, an abandoned campaign. She said in the CNN town hall then, "There is no question I'm in favour of banning fracking." So that's a direct quote, no grey area there. Last night's interview, she said, no, she will not ban fracking. So she was in favour of banning it. Now she's not going to do it. And then on immigration, she previously supported decriminalising illegal border crossings, said she would shut down the detention centres. Now she says she believes unauthorised border crossings, they are illegal, and she will provide funding that prioritises detention for anyone who poses threats. These are complete flip-flops. Here's how she addressed those U-turns last night.
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed. You mentioned the Green New Deal. I have always believed, and I have worked on it, that the climate crisis is real, that it is an urgent matter to which we should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time. We did that with the Inflation Reduction Act. We have set goals for the United States of America and by extension the globe around when we should meet certain standards for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, as an example. That value has not changed. My value around what we need to do to secure our border, that value has not changed. I spent two terms as the Attorney General of California prosecuting transnational criminal organizations, violations of American laws regarding the passage, illegal passage of guns, drugs, and human beings across our border. My values have not changed.
Values haven't changed. Four times over. All our policy positions have changed, and there's no explanation for them at all. And by the way, it's kind of genius in many ways, isn't it? You can imagine a vegan suddenly eating a steak, and you go, well, my values remain the same. Killing animals is wrong. Venison is now delicious, but fundamentally my values are the same. And finally, here she is last night, and I think this is at her least believable. She's describing the phone call she gets when Joe Biden rings to say he's not running. Hold on to your toes as it gets a little bit cringy.
My family was staying with us, and including my baby nieces, and we had just had pancakes and, you know, Auntie, can I have more bacon? Yes, I'll make you more bacon. And then we were gonna sit, we were sitting down to do a puzzle. And the phone rang and it was Joe Biden. And he told me what he had decided to do. And I asked him, are you sure? And he said, yes. And but that's how I learned about it.
And what about the endorsement? Did you ask for it?
He was very clear that he was going to support me.
So when he called to tell you, he said, I'm pulling out of the race and I'm going to support you.
Well, my first thought was not about me, to be honest with you. My first thought was about him, to be honest.
Is it, what, do you really think that her first thought is? Yeah, come on, that whole house was doing the hokey cokey and erupting in celebrations. I'd say they were like those families on Winning Streak when Granny gets to spin the wheel and you can see them practically booking their holidays on their phone. By the way, Tim Walz was in the interview, did a great job. He sat there saying very little. At one point, according to one newspaper, he said nothing for a total of 8 minutes. Donald Trump gave a one-word review of the interview, boring. Which is probably the most honest thing he said online in a long time. There is evidence that there's his distraction on the campaign trail because of Kamala's momentum and his refusal to listen to fellow Republicans, hoping he focuses more on the message. It's having a huge effect. There's a brand new Wall Street Journal poll overnight. It has Kamala Harris leading him in the national polls by 2% for the first time when you include the third party people. It's very significant. That's a poll by a leading Republican media organisation. So the momentum very much with Harris. Here's how far off Donald Trump has gone. This is for balance now, because I'm seeing the messages coming in accusing him of being a Trump supporter. Give it a rest. You have to cheer Kamala Harris. What a lot of messages here. What is your problem with Kamala Harris? Look, her platform outlines her plans. Give her a break. What did you want? A Broadway chorus line with Walls and Dana. Why not say it out loud, Oliver? You're a Trump supporter. At least Kamala could put a sentence together. Disappointed in you. You're clearly a Trump supporter. Give it a rest. You're a definite Republican the way you're having a go at her, says Bruce. No, this is proper balance here. The New York Times overnight had a piece on Donald Trump's insults. Now, bear in mind, this is a campaign where he needs to appeal to floating voters, many of whom are women and are black Americans. This is what they say. In a little over 5 weeks, in speeches, social media posts and interviews, Mr. Trump has called Kamala Harris a whack job, a communist, dumb as a rock, real garbage, and a bum. These are actual quotes, employing a phrase he applies almost exclusively to women, nasty. And he's made or amplified innuendo-laden references to his opponent's long-ago relationship with the former San Francisco mayor, Willie Brown, suggesting she traded sexual favours to accelerate her political career. That requires no further commentary at all, does it? It speaks for itself. No, we'll always bring, they're coming in again. Oh, someone says she has to win Pennsylvania. Of course, she's going to pivot on fracking. She's the best candidate to run in the last 20 years. Really? But you see, her whole thing was that she was going to be a progressive environmentalist who was going to ban fracking and any of the evil carbon emissions. Now, of course, she's had to flip because she needs to win Pennsylvania, where they want to frack. frack like a Trump, because Trump is all for fracking. So there you go. You won't get a more balanced review than here. She's a class act and a tough cookie. Enough with the hating. And someone says, when it comes to the US presidency, I'll take sane and boring over the alternative. And that's from Sheila. You see, I think sometimes people forget, in Ireland particularly, because we're so pro-Democrat, let's face it, and so pro-Joe Biden, that you have to remember, 70 million plus people are Republicans and will be voting for Donald Trump. And they will be voting, in their minds, not endorsing the things he says, but endorsing the kind of Republican things that they want. And they believe that Kamala Harris is too liberal. So that is the view that we're kind of giving here. OK. There you go. Everything can be funny. Castlebar fights to survive. Pianos save the world. And Kamala Harris waffles. Sure, where else would you get it? It is the end of the podcast. As you know it, if you have any interesting stories and things you think we definitely should know, pop us an email anytime at all. Oliver at rte.ie. Happy weekend to you all. Farewell. Thank you and slán.